In March, a curious protest took place in Seoul. Private kindergartens were going on strike. Protests by industry groups or workers are not uncommon in South Korea. But something about the protests in the childcare sector struck a raw nerve with the public. What was the industry protesting against? And how did Korea end up with a society so reliant on private kindergartens? We're going to answer all these questions today. From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm Yong Kwon, and this is Korean Context Explainer. We have here today Stephen Lim, an intern with the Korea Economic Institute, and Troy Stangarone, Senior Director for Trade and Congressional Affairs at KAEI. Troy, maybe we can begin by you setting the scene for how exactly childcare issues fits in with the larger challenges facing South Korean society today.
If we take sort of a big picture view of this and how South Korean society is going to change, it's still a relatively young society, but we're going to see rapid change. Part of this is basically due to the declining birth rate. In the early 1980s, the birth rate went below the total fertility rate of 2.1, but it's not just a question of it being, you know, slightly below. We've actually seen significant decline in childbirth. Last year, for example, for the first time ever, the total fertility rate was actually below one in South Korea. So you're seeing a significant decline in new births in South Korea. But at the same time, you have a situation to where, and this is the good news, South Koreans are actually living much, much longer. Since the 70s, they've added about 20 years to their life expectancy. And there is a study by Lancet, a British medical journal, that suggests that a South Korean woman born in 2035 will be living till about the age of 90, and that will give her the longest expected lifespan of anyone on the planet. South Korean men will have the third longest life expectancy. So there is a good side to this, you know, life expectancy is expanding, but we're seeing fewer and fewer births, and that is a challenge. That has implications for economic growth and all of these other issues. And where childcare really fits into this is part of the challenge in South Korea is the cost of having a child. You have very few childcare services. When President Moon came into office, for example, he set a goal of trying to raise up to 40% the number of children who are in government-established childcare facilities. When he came into office, though, it was only 12%, so that would be a huge jump. They put in place different steps, such as any building that will have 500 occupants will be required to have a child care center built into it as well to try and create more opportunities for, you know, working mothers to be able to have a place to have their child be so they can go back into the workforce. And so if we're going to see a shift in the birth rate, you need to have a way to take and help facilitate mothers being able to go back into the workforce to take and reduce some of this load. And so be it either steps they're taking to provide more funding to help support efforts by parents to have birth, or to take and improve childcare. You know, it's an important part of this picture.
And Stephen, you recently wrote a very wonderful blog article for the Peninsula blog on a recent scandal that took place in the childcare sector in South Korea. Of course, childcare sector is throughout the world a very sensitive area, but in South Korea in particular, because of the looming demographic issue, has become an even bigger social issue. Now, before we jump into what the scandal was, could you lay out for us what the childcare sector and childcare industry looks like in South Korea at this moment?
In 2017, 75% of kindergartens out of the overall total were privately run. As Troy mentioned, when President Moon came into office, it was around 12%. So it's pretty heavily dominated by private kindergartens. And while they are private, the private kindergartens do take government subsidies. So it's a bit of a dual system in terms of their revenue flows. So it's not 100% private. The government does have influence, I guess you could say, in terms of how the private kindergartens operate.
They're taking public funds for these operations, and perhaps this is why the recent scandal was such a big issue in South Korea. Is that correct? Could you maybe talk to us about what the recent scandal was and how the private kindergarten industry acted and how the government and the Korean public responded?
So to start from the beginning, in last October, a government report came out describing all of this financial mismanagement that was very much rampant within the KKA And in response to that, in January of this year, the government, specifically the Ministry of Education, announced that it would implement Edufine, which is the name of the state accounting system, which all the public schools, high schools, middle schools, elementary schools use for their accounting matters, with the deadline of March for implementation. Around the same time, there were three bills that were proposed in the National Assembly looking to improve the strength of regulations on private kindergartens. So those two, the Edufine system and the three bills, those twin issues, really did not go over too well with the KKA. They essentially took those two issues as a death knell, a move that would infringe upon their autonomy, their authority in managing their day-to-day operations, and ultimately their survival. They saw it as an existential threat. So hence the show of force, I guess you could say, in the protest. This protest took place a few days before the school year was supposed to start, and they threatened to delay opening indefinitely unless the government relented primarily on the Edufine issue, but on the bills as well. The public really didn't take kindly to that. There was a lot of significant public backlash, both from parents and from the government. There were petitions from parents calling for action against the association. Parents filed civil complaints. Ministry of Education moved to revoke the KKA's license, which effectively defanged it and took away any sort of negotiating power, any position they had in that realm. So the public backlash was very swift and very clear in opposition to the KKA's stance.
In your blog, you have a policy recommendation on how to respond to accountability in the childcare sector and also how to better deal with the private kindergartens. And this is something that you see the Moon administration doing. Could you tell us what your policy recommendation was?
Well, it's very simple. At its core, really, the government just needs to increase the number of public kindergartens, period. That's the main issue. Edufine is all good and well. It does part of the work. The monitoring work is quite important. But as long as the private kindergarten industry as a whole carries such a strong influence by virtue of representing 75 or whatever percentage of the total it is, as long as that's the case, the government will have a lot of issues on its hands in terms of regulating these private kindergartens. So one, they really need to increase the number of public kindergartens. Secondly, increasing the pay and the staffing numbers, hiring more teachers would go a long way towards supporting the shift that the government hopes to make towards 40% in terms of the share of public kindergartens. Public daycares also factor into the equation because, obviously, age-wise, they segue into public kindergarten.
In terms of execution, it seems like it's consistent with President Moon's platforms of an inclusive society that he came to office with. And also in terms of actually implementing, it seems like his administration has taken a few steps towards increasing childcare services, especially in new urban areas that he's developing. But Troy, this raises another question, which is, how much capacity, how much political space does President Moon have to actually dedicate national resources to this? He's, of course, beleaguered by all sorts of other issues. We have negotiations with North Korea. We have the fine dust crisis. We have challenges with South Korea's energy diversity. We have challenges on all other social fronts, gender equality, aging society, other things. Where does this rank in terms of President Moon's priorities?
I think if we look at how the administration has developed over its first two and a half years, key agenda points have been what, you know, was called the income-led growth strategy and also North Korea. These have sort of been the two primary pillars. The fine dust issue, it's something that because it's very, you know, visible, that has forced its way onto the agenda. And we've seen the Moon administration try to take steps to deal with this as, you know, one would expect from any responsive democratic government. But this is something that has been there on the agenda they've been pushing. In their first year in office, they upped for childcare services, the budget, by about $200 million. in last year's supplementary budget. This was also one of the key issues that was included in that. So it is something that there has been political space for and that the administration has been pursuing. But we talk about things being necessary but not sufficient. If you're going to really address the demographic crisis that Korea is going to face over the next coming decades, where, you know, we already see the workforce declining, it's going to go down probably by about around 7 million people over the next two decades or so. And if you're going to address that, you need to find a way to better integrate women into the workforce. This won't be the only way to do it. There's other issues that have to be addressed. You mentioned, you know, gender equality issues, but there's a strong incentive to do this. The IMF in their recent Article 4 paper put out some initial data from a study they're doing. It indicates that if South Korea were to raise the female labor force participation rate to the same participation rate as the men in South Korean society by 2035, it would add 7% to gross domestic product, despite the demographic decline that they're going to see. And just to put that in context, so that way people have an understanding of like how significant that would be. Right now, South Korea spends about 7% of GDP on healthcare. So in essence, you know, it would be as much as South Korea is spending on healthcare today. So given where the demographics are going, given the potential economic benefits, there's a strong incentive to make sure this does get a place of priority on the agenda going forward, even if some issues like fine dust because they're immediate here and now, or North Korea are very publicly front and center, this is an important issue going forward.
That's it for the episode today. Many thanks to Stephen Lim and Troy Stangarone, and to you listeners for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments, please tweet at us at KOREAECONINST. We have a very exciting event coming up. On June 11th, Theo Clement, research associate at King's College London, will present his paper on the evolution of North Korean special economic zones, the potential for competition between China and South Korea in developing these areas after sanctions are lifted, and why cooperation would be necessary for both to achieve their goals in North Korea. Please RSVP at keia.org. Hope to see you there.